to live righteously.
It's time for another episode of The Culturaholics, episode number 126. In the second and third block, we visit with Christina Harris Peterson. We talk all about acting and math and science and husbands and all that stuff. I didn't do a very good job of selling it. It's a great episode. Sorry. It's been a couple weeks since we recorded it, but you are going to love it. You will find all about math warriors, right? That's a thing. You don't know what a math warrior is? Well, you got to listen to the episode, second and third block. Quick follow-up. So not in this last Articles of News, but the week before Articles of News, I mentioned that I was going to get some scriptures for my wife, I think, for Mother's Day, right? I didn't know if that's what I was going to do. Anyway, I brought up a website that I found, CustomLDSScriptures.com. And anyway, I was kind of looking around, playing around with that because I thought about maybe getting like, some pink scriptures or maybe getting like some old school, old timey, like Joseph Smith time scriptures. And I was like, oh, that'd be a cool gift. You know, get her name put on it and do that whole thing. And then, I got contacted from the folks over at CustomLDSScriptures.com. And they're like, hey, you know what? Thanks for talking about us. We'd love to bring by a set of scriptures for your wife. So that was cool. But now here comes the thing. So I'm looking at and this is the last time I'll give it, I promise, CustomLDSScriptures.com. And now I'm kind of like, maybe my wife wants what I want. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't decide on which scriptures to get. Because I know what my wife would probably like. You know, get kind of a pink or, you know, there's these cool, like, stingray, like, leather-bound, hard-bound. Anyway, they do all sorts of binding for scriptures. And I'm noticing what I think my wife would like, but I feel like I'm kind of coming in at, like, that Homer Simpson episode where he buys Marge a bowling ball and puts his name on it. That kind of thing. Like, I'm kind of thinking of getting my wife scriptures with my name on it because I think that they're really cool. And I want to get a set, like, the old-timey Joseph Smith first edition run of the Book of Mormon kind of scriptures. Anyway, I don't know. So, I don't know, maybe check it out and give me some advice. Should I do what I should get for my wife or should I do for me? Or is this just the worst intro to a whole thing? Should I not have even brought this up? I probably shouldn't have even brought this up, but these are the things I'm dealing with. I'm going to give the website one more time in case you want to check it out. It's CustomLDSScriptures.com. Maybe I should just go with the pink. I'll go with the pink and then I can get myself my own thing. Or is customizing his scriptures, is this just like a big Mormon problem and it's not even really a problem? The musings in my head. All right, second and third block, it's Christina Harris Peterson. It's episode number 126 of The Cultural Hall.
We invite you to claim your courage by shedding shameful thoughts, actions, and feelings that disrupt your ability to live authentically or feel connected to others by letting go of fear, blame, and your idea of perfection. The Healing Group, where women go for hope, growth, and healing. We're the home of the Sex Girls. Are you a mother feeling lost in a relationship and feeling stuck? Are you feeling overwhelmed by life? Schedule an appointment now. Can't make it to our office? No problem. Meet with a therapist individually or with a group in our virtual clinic right from the comfort of your own home. Visit thehealinggroup.com for more information.
All right, it's time for the second block of the Cultural Hall, and joining us via the telephone from another part of God's great country, it's Christina Harris Peterson. Thank you for being here with us.
Thank you for having me.
The way that this came about, I kind of like this, and I'm surprised that there's actually not more of this that happens with the Cultural Hall, but I want to share this. I got this email from a gentleman by the name of Kellen Peterson. It says, hey, I've been a listener for about the last 15 to 18 months, and I love the show. Thank you for calling it a show, Kellen, by the way. I pretty much listen to Articles of News every Monday within hours of being released. Anyway, I just started listening to the Mormon Building Bridges episode, and you guys mentioned guest suggestions. Well, since she is probably too modest, I'd like to suggest my wife as a guest. He goes on. She's an actress, writer, director, chemistry professor, and convert. Her undergraduate degree is in musical theater at NYU. While an undergrad, she joined the church, later got a PhD in biochemistry, and now teaches at Barnard, you know, the Lady College of Columbia University. As an early convert, she met sister missionaries in the Deaf Branch in New York. One of their stories became the inspiration for her first short film called Diminished Chords, which has shown and won awards at a number of film festivals. It's about a deaf girl wanting to learn to sing. Her current film project is called Math Warriors, which we're going to have to talk about because that sounds neither mathematical or warrior. A web series that is something like The Big Bang Theory meets The Office. This has led to be a panel at a guest at a panel guest at a number of events talking about making science and mathematics more accessible to kids, especially women. And then he says, if you think she'd make a good guest, let me know. I said, yes, we've gone back and forth. And now Christina Harris Peterson, Kellen's wife, in the cultural
hall. That's awesome. Thank you, Kellen.
The spouses are always the best promoters.
No kidding. He's like my agent. Yeah. I had no idea.
I'm a fan of starting chronological order. So let's start youth. Where were you born and raised?
I was born and raised in California in the Bay Area.
And when I think of California, I think of not like Utah as far as the Mormon church goes, but there had to have been LDS folk around.
There definitely were. I guess I didn't know anyone who was Mormon, or maybe it just didn't come up in conversation until I was in ninth grade. And I remember the day that I heard the word Mormon because one of my friends in high school told me she was Mormon. And of course, you know, I lived in Santa Cruz, which is sort of a hippie kind of place. And, you know, it's very tolerant, sort of like, you know, it was cool that she was Mormon. I just didn't know what that meant. Yeah. So then I went home and I asked my parents, I was like, what does it mean? My friend told me she was Mormon. And so they had me look up in the encyclopedia Mormon, because they didn't want to give me any kind of preconceived ideas as to what their thoughts were, so mm-hmm. they had me read it. And so that's how I first found out what a Mormon was, and I had a couple of really good friends in high school, coincidentally, who were the few Mormons actually in the school, but they tended to be my really good friends. So.
What was the takeaway from the encyclopedia reading? What did you get from it?
You know, honestly, this is actually, I've given this talk in sacrament meeting before, where it's almost as if I remember reading it and thinking, this seems like a really, really weird story. It was kind of almost as if, you know, like aliens came down and told them something. I mean, to me, it seemed that foreign. Uh-huh. And so I never would have thought when I was in ninth grade and I read that encyclopedia article that several years later I would actually be a Mormon. Because it sounded so out there, the story. You know, this angel came down and visited this kid and who was barely educated, and it just seemed kind of out there. So mm-hmm. that was my impression, totally honestly. But I certainly obviously have had a change of opinion and a change of heart. So
well, I hope so. Otherwise, this conversation gets really awkward really quick. No, but I always do find that fascinating, especially talking, and we've mentioned this a bunch on the cultural hall, but where, you know, with other Christian faiths where it's like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how you believe that story about Joseph Smith and the gold plates. And I go, oh, do you mean like Noah talking to a bush and coming down with, you know what I'm saying? Or not Noah, Moses, I'm sorry. Moses talking to a bush and I think religion is a little crazy.
You know, I mean, I think for me, it just seemed, I guess I was ready to believe that stuff would have happened years and years before my kind of being in existence. But I think it was hard for me because it was more recent. Uh-huh. And I'm not sure why. It just seemed a little different to me.
So ninth grade, you find yourself, okay, what's a Mormon? Mom and dad. Now, it's interesting that your parents did that. What are their feelings on Mormonism?
Well, you know, I think they were trying not to sway me because they had actually lived in Salt Lake City in the 1970s. And so, unfortunately, they hadn't had great experiences, which I heard a lot about after I was considering joining the church. But they didn't tell me then. I think they just didn't want to jade my perspective. Like, which was very, you know, honorable of them.
Like what, though? Like people not treating them well or just feeling like an outcast?
You know,
or
I think a lot of it was, well, there were a few things, two specifically. I'll try not to take too much time on this, but they were the only non-members on their block, mm-hmm. I understand, in Salt Lake at the time. And, you know, from their perspective, they would always have these block parties, which I'm guessing were probably ward parties, right? Uh-huh. And they would have these parties on the block, and as my parents put it, they never bothered to invite us, but they had no problem sending their missionaries over to our house. So, I mean, it was kind of like my parents felt like they weren't included in these block parties. They were never invited, but the missionaries were sent to their home. It's sort of like, if you would join us, then we would invite you, kind of thing. That's okay. How they felt. I'm not saying that was necessarily the message that was trying to be sent.
Sure, but perception becoming reality as far as that goes.
Right, yeah. And then the other thing I think that happened was when the missionaries came over, they had them to their home a few times, and my parents asked them how they could justify what my parents perceived as racism within their church. And the answer that they got involved some things that since then I have studied, and I think that perhaps the missionaries were a little confused in terms of scriptural inaccuracies. But so
speaking of blacks in the priesthood, as I am assuming what you're loosely alluding to.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, my parents were, you know, they didn't like that. They didn't like that any type of person would be prevented from having a leadership role, and especially on the basis of race. And so they basically told the missionaries that, and they didn't like the response that they got. And the response was actually scriptural. It's just I feel, and in doing some studying after the fact, obviously after I heard about these stories, I think it was a misinterpretation on the part of the missionaries, which is unfortunate because now, you know, my parents had this feeling for 20 years, and then I heard about it. So
yeah, and it's something that they obviously didn't forget either. You mentioned in high school, right. A bunch of it seemed like your really good friends were Mormon folks as well. They invite you out to like church dances and that kind of stuff, or was it sort of an arm's distance Mormonism?
It was a little bit more of an arm's distance, but I would say that I definitely going over to their homes and feeling like, I mean, I wasn't the sort of person that wanted to drink and get into smoking and drugs and things. And I mean, in a hippie town, there aren't that many people that are like that. So coincidentally, I mean, we would just get together and, you know, swim and just do fun stuff that didn't involve those things, didn't involve the drugs and alcohol. So I never did get invited to a church event actually during high school, but I did a lot of things with those people, with those Mormons. There's two of them specifically that I hung out with a lot. And they were always, you know, fun activities.
Are they people that you're still in touch with?
Yes, actually, the one of them was my maid of honor in my wedding, which was great. So, and then the other, I'm not in as good of touch with him. He went on a mission, which is great, and then went to BYU,
which is not so great. Just kidding.
Oh well, I don't know. Depends on your perspective. My husband Kellen went to the University of Utah, so I think my alliances lie there. No, you know, no offense to anyone else, but
you just made a lot of people really mad. But we'll move on.
I know. What am I doing? I'm on the cultural hall saying something about the University of Utah. It's very controversial.
I've never heard of that school anyway. Don't worry about it.
I'm sure you haven't. but yeah, so the other gentleman that I was friends with, he's married. He has some beautiful children and lives still in the Bay Area, but I've been in New York now for many years, so I've sort of lost touch with him.
Was there ever a conversation with those two folks being like, hey, why didn't you ever invite me? Look, I'm here now. I could have had this earlier.
You know, I never actually did say that. I actually was impressed that both of those friends did give me a Book of Mormon at different points, and I was impressed that they did that because I think, to me, it's something that's very personal to me, and I can just imagine it takes a whole, for me, I don't know, for other people I think they feel differently, but for me it's such a treasure that I feel like it's hard for me to give a Book of Mormon to someone and not worry about sort of being rejected or, you know. I told them how much I appreciated that, but
it's such a gesture of vulnerability to be like, hey, you know what? I align my entire life with this and the contents of this book, and
right.
Here you go.
Right. I hope you like it.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So I did tell them, you know, how much I admired them to be able to do that, because it then took me several years to actually make the decision to get baptized. So, you know, to them, they may have perceived that as a rejection, but little did they know that many years later, I actually got baptized. So you never know. You're planting seeds. You kind of have to look at it, I think, that way.
So you graduate from high school, Bay Area, and then what? What leads you back east?
You know, I went to NYU because at the time it was the one place that I could study musical theater in a conservatory and also be pre-med. So I wanted to do these two different things, and it was very difficult to find a place that I could do it. And NYU was, at the time, one of the very few places I could do it. So when I got admitted to NYU and into Tisch, the art school at NYU, I decided I kind of had to grab the opportunity, even though it was kind of scary. I'd never been to New York until I was accepted. So we came and visited, and I took the leap, and that's how I ended up in New York.
But you make it sound like everyone who applies to NYU and wants to do that gets in. That's a pretty exclusive group.
You know, I mean, it is a program that you have to audition for. So I was very, very excited that I got in, and I certainly wasn't. Let's put it this way. I wasn't really expecting to get accepted, which is one of the reasons why we didn't just go visit New York, right? If I had just thought I was going to get accepted, we would have visited sooner. Mm-hmm. But when I got the acceptance letter, there were a few, you know, emotional moments in our driveway by the mailbox, and then we decided we better go to New York and visit and see if I liked it.
And parents were on board? Because it's also, the other thing I know about NYU is that it's not an inexpensive experience.
Well, that is very true, and that is an important point, yes. You know, it was not an inexpensive endeavor, but I did get some scholarship help from the university and then also from other places, so other scholarship funds. But yeah, I mean, I was very lucky that I was able to take the leap. I mean, I understand that that's not always a possibility, so I was very lucky that and also lucky that my parents were willing to have me go across the country when I was 18. So
yeah, for a lot of people, you don't want to do that. They would try and discourage, or, you know, isn't there a great state school here in California and you can get, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had a Regents scholarship at UC Santa Cruz, which was my hometown. So I could have stayed there, but I just, you know, I wanted to try something different. I wanted to sort of see what the world had to offer, I think, or check out a different part of the world. And also, it was a unique opportunity to be able to do both programs simultaneously in a place like New York City, where, I mean, there's just so much going on, which is very different than Santa Cruz, trust me, the surf mecca, which is awesome. I love Santa Cruz. It's gorgeous and all of that, but there's a whole lot more things going on, definitely, in New York.
But yeah, so I suppose you couldn't get too much different from Santa Cruz to New York City.
You know, maybe Hawaii might be more different. I don't know.
So you get out there and you're alone, essentially, right? There's not other friends from Santa Cruz that are there. And
no, I didn't have any family or friends that I knew when I came to New York. I remember when my dad went away and left me at the dorm, and he was driving off in a taxi, and sort of my stomach kind of fell, and I was like, oh my gosh, I am alone in New York City. Yeah, so it was a challenge, but, you know, I met a lot of great people and learned a whole lot about a lot of different religions, actually. That was one of the things that I did, was I explored religions, because I was on my own and I wanted to figure out what I believed, because within my family there were a lot of different religions that were represented. I have Jewish relatives. I have some of my ancestors were involved in, really heavily involved in, the Zionist movement. Around World War II and thereafter. So that's pretty interesting. Like, in my family, there's a Jewish group, there's a Catholic group, there's an evangelical group, there's a kind of, I guess I would call, atheist group, mm-hmm. or just kind of, you know, que sera sera group, maybe. So I wanted to figure out what I believed, and that was part of the reason why I started looking into different religions, and one of those religions was, of course, the Mormon Church. So
then what? Like missionaries, or, you know what I'm saying? You're out there, yeah. You're looking at all this stuff. I'm sure it's a time for most people, I think, even within the faith, it's a time where they go, am I really doing this? Is this the thing that's going to be for me in my life? They go off to school and go, you know, mom's not there, dad's not there Sunday morning. I'm deciding whether or not to do it for myself. You're doing it in kind of a larger scale, deciding, you know, is there some group that I want to be a part of? What are these groups even about? So then what was the next step?
Yeah, so, I mean, I looked at a lot of different groups. I did some different studies with different groups. And then I basically already sort of, if I'm being totally honest, I probably did have a little bit of a bias toward Christianity because my grandmother was such a great example to me, and she was a Christian. And I think at some point I kind of knew that I just wanted to be like her, whatever it took. And so that was, I think, what veered me toward looking more at the Christian groups. And so I did several different Bible studies with different groups. And it was interesting. I'm summarizing over, you know, this all happened over a couple of years. But
oh, I thought we were doing a play-by-play, detail. Shoot.
Oh, sorry. I mean, there's just so many details to cover. I don't know. How much time do we have here?
I'm kidding.
I know. Yeah, so, but just my impressions looking back, I remember what stood out to me when I studied with the Mormons as opposed to studying with some of the other Christian groups that I studied with, and this is just an observation, not sort of a judgment, but what I noticed with the Mormons was that they asked me a lot of questions. And with the other groups, I felt like they were sort of, we would read scriptures, which was great, and then they would kind of give me tell me how I'm supposed to interpret the scripture, or you know, whereas the Mormons were asking me what I thought of scriptures, and were asking me, you know, have you been praying, and, you know, encouraging me to pray and get my own answers. So it was an interesting kind of shift in thinking, because the other groups that I was studying with, and, you know, I studied with maybe three or four different groups, so I'm sure everybody would be different, but it was very striking to me that the Mormons wanted to know what I thought and also wanted me to pray and ask God directly to get my answer rather than sort of trying to tell me what the answer would be, you know? So that really struck me. And at some point in the first couple of years of my time at NYU, unfortunately, my grandmother passed away. She had breast cancer. And so this was the grandmother that I really just wanted to be like. And I grieved her loss, and ultimately she left a journal with some things that she had written down. And one of the things that was that she said was that if she could have any wish to come true, it would be that all of her grandchildren accepted Jesus Christ and tried to emulate him, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And that really struck me, that of all the things that she could have said, that that's what she said. And, you know, as a 19-year-old, I just really wanted to try and be like her as much as I could. And so I thought, you know what, I think I need to try and make a commitment to a church. And so as I was looking at different churches, to me, I felt the most comfortable in the Mormon church, and that's where I decided to be baptized.
So was it a thing where, was there a moment where you're like, yeah, this is the church I want to be a part of, like an answered prayer? Or was it just like, you know, I've weighed it out, I put it all out on the scale, and I think Mormon.
I mean, I weighed it out, I met with the missionaries. I mean, again, I'm really summarizing a couple of years here, because I've met with the missionaries twice. I met with them once in California and then once in New York. So I went through the whole discussions twice. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you can tell. Like, I don't make decisions quickly, mm-hmm. and I try. I weigh a lot of things just to kind of make sure that I don't make a commitment that I don't want to keep. I would say though that once I did commit and once I did get baptized, I struggled at first, and so I didn't actually go to church as much as I would like to say I did for the first year. And then my real moment of conversion, I would say, actually happened about a year after I was baptized and confirmed. So
let's talk about that moment.
Okay.
Coming back,
sure.
In the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5000. To book your shoot today.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
All right, so I've done something that I hate that I do, and I don't do it very often. Other panelists here in the Cultural Hall do it way more. But when we talk to our guests off mic, I always hate that I do that because I feel like it misses out on things, or I don't mention things, or it's a weird flow of things, or I'll find something out that then I'm like, oh yeah, I need to make sure that I ask you that, and then I don't end up asking you that in the episode. And I've just done that with Christina in the last break. Between the second and third block, turn off the microphones, we're saving stuff down, and I asked her about how Kellen, the guy who helped arrange this episode, how he got to hear about the Cultural Hall. So how did he get to hear about it?
You know, I'm not totally sure where he first heard about it, but I just, again, what I said to you in the break was I'm grateful that you have this wonderful podcast for a number of reasons. I've heard a few of the podcasts as well, but the main reason I'm super grateful is because that means Kellen puts on his earphones and does the dishes while he's listening to your podcast. So please keep them coming.
You got lots of dishes, it sounds like. Okay, we'll keep them coming.
We do. We don't have a dishwasher. It's New York. Dishwashers are at a premium here, yes.
Yeah, that's space in the kitchen. If you got the dishwasher, whoo, yeah.
That's right. Kellen is my dishwasher.
That's when you got to give him a little slap on the shoulder or the tush, right? Kellen is my dishwasher. Right, babe?
That's right.
And then you also asked me, you said, well, why did I start doing the Cultural Hall? And yeah. We've talked about this before, but it's been a while, so I'll mention it again. When we originally started the Cultural Hall, the thought was to do interviews with famous Mormon people.
Cool.
And so we were thinking about that, and it was like, you know, one of the big things for me is I really wanted to meet Peter Breinholt, who was episode, I want to say it's episode like 4. Three.
Cool.
I don't know, early on. And I really liked his music, and I couldn't justify a way to be like, hey, I want to just talk to you about being Mormon and have you play music for me in a non-creepy way. You know what I'm saying? It's like, hey, sit for me with an hour and play me songs and let's talk about your past. And so it was not just that. I was like, you know, I know other people like him and like other Mormon people. We really like to be able to be like, oh, that person's Mormon, or that, you know, that band is Mormon, or the lead singer of that band is Mormon, and uh-huh. He continues to be a Mormon person, hold to his faith, and we kind of have that affinity towards that. So I was like, you know, I can't be the only one, and we started that, and then quickly we decided, or not necessarily we decided, it was decided for us, that there were a lot of things in addition to having the conversation with Mormon, you know, these famous Mormon people that needed to be discussed that wasn't being discussed. And so that's where you get episodes like gay returned missionaries, and you get things right. Like the ordained women, and you get some of these fringe things mm-hmm. just because there's not the conversation being had in a public forum about it. And so
right.
We haven't steered away, certainly, from what we deem to be those famous Mormon people, or as I like to call it now, Mormon folk of note. but also to be able to take on some of those topics that, you know, we understand how the church itself can't delve into those
right.
topics, because then people go, well, wait, what's going on? Why is the church doing this? But mm-hmm. As the Cultural Hall, as a panel, and as a group of faithful Latter-day Saints, people who are, you know, attend church and who want to still be a part of the faith, be able to look at it in a respective way going, you know what, we want this, but let's talk about it. We don't feel like we need to be quiet about it. So,
right. That's great.
Yeah.
I'm glad you guys do that.
Well, thank you very much. And encourage you and others like your husband and others to continue to share it with other folk, because we feel like it's a great thing. And the only thing I'll correct you on, Christina, because I know that people will come at me if I don't, is it's not a podcast, it's a show. Okay, so.
Oh. Sorry.
Because anyone can have a podcast, but what we have here, right here, This is a show.
Awesome.
So the moment, the pivotal moment in your Mormonism.
The pivotal moment. So for me was after I'd already joined the church and I had visiting teachers, and one of my visiting teachers basically told me, I'm not sure she really asked, but she just sort of told me, hey, this summer we're going to read the Book of Mormon every day together. And I was like, okay. So she came over to my apartment every day, and we read the Book of Mormon for about an hour each day. And by the time we got to King Benjamin's speech
in Mosiah, kind of,
right? It's hard to explain, but it's just, I had a moment where I just went from sort of having the anxiety of trying to figure out if it was right to where I just knew it was right. And then I could spend my energy moving forward in that direction, as opposed to sort of struggling with trying to figure out if it was right. It was just a moment where of peace, where I just knew that this is what I needed to do and that it was true.
You know, I really like that, and I know you want to expound, but I want to point this out because I don't feel like opportunities like this are shared that publicly. But a visiting teacher and the importance of visiting teaching, and someone knowing and being able to be prompted by the Spirit and being able to genuinely care. An hour a day is a lot of caring. On behalf of a visiting teacher, and how that influenced your life. Sorry, now go ahead and pick up.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think you covered it. It was an important moment in my life because I could then move forward and know that I wanted to be a Latter-day Saint with my whole heart. And so, you know, whereas before I was sort of not really sure, and, you know, there was some backlash from my family. They weren't super, super happy about me being Mormon, although a lot of that has changed now. Which has been great. So,
is it just time that's got the change?
I think it's time, but also even, you know, with me being in New York City and them being in California, I think especially my mom has come at least to appreciate the support that I have here. And, you know, one time I got injured and I had a problem with my ankle, and, you know, being in New York and trying to be on crutches isn't a very easy place to be on crutches because you're always taking public transit and having to walk places. But so I had, again, visiting teachers and home teachers helping me, and just to have a community, I think, meant a lot to her. And so she has seen how it's been good for me. So in that respect, I think she's very pleased with my being part of the church. I mean, I'm not sure she's at the point where she would want to be part of the church. I don't think she is, because she hasn't gone, but but she can at least appreciate how it's been good for me.
Well, Christina, have you asked her?
Well, that's a great question. Maybe I should tell her I'm going to come over and read the Book of Mormon with her every day, but good. I live in New York and she's in California. But
well, there are daily flights. I just want to point that out.
That's true. I mean, you know, she has come with me to church several times. Usually, if I'm home or she's here in New York, I try to finagle it so that I can sing in church when she's here, because then that means that she'll come.
Oh, I just love hearing you sing. Oh, well, it happens to be that I'm doing it at church. Well, okay,
right.
I'll come along.
Exactly. Yep, she comes.
So your hubby, where does he fit into this whole thing? How did you guys meet?
So we met here in New York. Again, another reason why it was good that I came to New York. We met at a stake event, actually, a stake singles event.
Yes.
They work.
That's why they do them.
That's right. So we met. It was a party at Roosevelt Island. It was an outdoor kind of summer party that the church used to sponsor. They don't anymore. But so we met there, and then we dated actually for a couple of years, which
what?
I know in Mormon time is a long time. So yeah, we dated for a couple of years, and then we got married in the temple in New York, and my family came. We had a ring ceremony for my family, and, you know, tried to include them as much as possible. And Kellen's family came from Utah, and most of them were able to go into the temple with us, which is great. So, and then my family, I think, had a remarkably good experience. We actually did the whole thing at the church building in New York City, and that part of the reason for that was I felt like that was probably the one time I might get all of my family to come to the church building.
Mm-hmm.
And also I wanted them to kind of at least get a sense of why I had joined and maybe come to an appreciation of it, particularly some of the folks that are maybe in the more atheist camp, you know, who I think were sort of like, what? Why did she do that?
Yeah.
You know? But they all came, and it was great to see they felt like they were included because of we did a fairly elaborate ring ceremony. I don't know, not elaborate in terms of stuff we did, but like we had a family history section where people from my family came up and talked about our history, and people from Kellen's family came up and spoke about history. And so I think we tried to make it so that everybody felt like this was not just Kellen and me getting married, but this was our family, a celebration of our families and a bringing together of our family.
Which it makes me happy to hear that your family had that great experience, because I know for a lot of people, we've talked about it here in the Cultural Hall, that some families, when they're like, wait, I'm going to go see my daughter get married. No, you can't. Right. They're getting married at the temple. What do you mean I can't? It's my daughter. Of course I can.
Right.
And some feelings get hurt. So I applaud you for making that effort to make sure that everyone did. And then awesome that everyone did come away from it feeling like, hey, this was a great thing.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised by their feedback, actually. I mean, they were very positive about their feelings. In fact, one of my relatives said, wow, I didn't realize Mormon weddings were so inclusive. And I just said, yeah, well, I'm glad you had a great experience. I didn't want to say, well, we kind of had to fight a lot of battles to get it this way, you know. But I mean, really, the honest truth is we wanted to try and include people, and frankly, I was a little bit ignorant of maybe some of the resistance by other folks in the church. I didn't have a full understanding that ring ceremonies were sort of, I don't know, shied away from, or I'm not really sure how to quite summarize it, but I was ignorant, I guess. And so I didn't realize I was going to come up against several different battles in order to get this sort of more inclusive, ring ceremony. But we did, in the end, we did get it, and the stake president was great and helpful. It was just sort of something we had to navigate in order to include everyone.
So you're able to hook yourself up with a great man from everything that I can tell about it. He's the one, after all, who did in fact get you here. But you know, we're missing a lot of stuff here. You're a doctor of biochemistry and an actress. So there's a lot that I need to know about. So why not pick one? Why not be a biochemist or be an actress? Why combine the two?
That's a great question. I mean, to me, I've always enjoyed both. So I think basically after I graduated from NYU, I had done the pre-med program and I had done the musical theater and acting program, and I worked at a biochemistry lab. You have to have a day job, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people are waitressing, and I was working in a biochemistry lab doing research part-time, and they were relatively flexible with my schedule, so I could still do auditions. I went on a couple of national tours, and basically, I enjoyed those things, but I think I found that when I was out on tours, I'm not sure how to explain it, but it just... I realized that I needed more sort of challenge, just academically. And so I ended up getting, turning my job, basically my research position, into a graduate program, essentially. So I was still doing research and I was still auditioning and I was still, singing and dancing, but I was more geared toward trying to get a graduate degree out of my job as well. And then that ended up, it's kind of hard to explain how this happened, but basically the professor that I was working with said, hey, you know, I think you're doing a good job. Why don't we see about maybe enrolling you in getting you into a PhD program? And so I basically got to know some professors and was working in collaboration with them, and then ended up collaborating with a professor in Wales in the UK. And so I ended up becoming a PhD student of his. So I went to Cardiff University in Wales, and I lived there for a couple of years.
Yeah, of course.
And
of course, like
did
you
my
do.
Research yeah. there. That's what you do, right?
Yeah, yeah. Right? Sure.
So, I mean, and that was great. Also, that was kind of a cool experience in the church because we were in a small branch. And I think at one point I had maybe three or four, maybe five callings. I'm not really sure.
Oh, my gosh.
But Yeah, but it was a cool experience. It was a very small branch, so I felt almost as if, and you know, almost as if I was doing a little bit of missionary work, kind of as I was a graduate student, because oftentimes the missionaries would call me to go on splits with them, and if there was a discussion that was being taught, oftentimes they would ask me if I would come, and so it was a lot of fun to do that, to be somewhere different, and to kind of get an appreciation for a different culture too.
And then came back as a doctor.
Right. I came back with a PhD, yeah. And I've been teaching at NYU in Columbia biochemistry classes. And actually, just recently, I started up at New York Medical College. So I now am up there, and I'll be there full-time starting June 1st. So I'm teaching up at the medical school now, which is cool.
So in my mind, the classes, based on your history, it just seems like it would just be one gigantic show tune. Am I right?
kind of, a little bit. I mean, it's funny because I think definitely on the scale of chemistry professors, I'm on the more exuberant side, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And but you know, I've never had the courage, I suppose, to do a total show tune or a tap dance. But you know, it could.
But
happen.
you could, and that's the thing. There are people that are listening to this going, but she was able to graduate in the musical dance theater from NYU. I just want to get into NYU, and she has to do that and be a doctor. Like I'd like to have a tenth of that talent and ability to be able to do those things. So
Thank you.
But I really do think that if you could make a song about boron, that would be just ultimate.
And make it not boring.
Exactly.
That would be great.
Exactly. Well, see where the dramatic build is. It starts out very humdrum and boron, and then you know, that chorus and the thing at the end is, it's just like, and it's boron, you know.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nice. Love it. Something I can tap dance to. That would be great.
Copyright, by the way, I call claims on that. If you decide to use it, you have to give me at least credit on it.
I was going to say, we should collaborate on this. Sounds like you've got some skills.
Yeah, well, you know, don't make offers if you don't intend to actually have me do that. I would absolutely love anything like that, and find myself doing odd things like that all the time.
Awesome. Let's do it.
All right. You've said it. You better watch
all
out.
Right.
Now it's going to happen.
Perfect.
Let's talk about Math Warriors real quick. I only have a couple more minutes, and I don't want to rush through stuff. But Math Warriors. So this is... In the description, it's like Big Bang Theory meets The Office.
Yeah, I mean, our tagline is love, betrayal, calculus. So it's definitely a comedy, and it kind of brings together the worlds of math and science with pop culture, is maybe how I would describe it. So it follows the many obstacles that face a certain group of math nerds, and all the things that they have to go through in order to succeed, for example, in winning the math-a-thon is one of the things that they're trying to do. So they go to these math competitions and they're trying to win.
Mm-hmm.
So in the meantime, the main character is obsessed with prime numbers, which also brings a little bit of, hopefully, comedy into the whole thing. And also she has an issue where her mother ends up getting arrested for a sweepstakes scam because she's trying to make money, right, the mother. And anyway, so then the main character has to figure out how she's going to pay her tuition. And she's a nerd, right? But mm-hmm. she's very smart. And but then she ends up enrolling into a pageant in order to make tuition money, in order to pay her tuition while her mom's in jail. So you end up with these pageant ladies juxtaposed with the nerds, which can also, of course, make for some comedy there. And then you have the mom who's in prison, so we're following the prison plot, too. So we've got the prisoners learning math in jail, and we've got, you know, the pageant ladies next to the nerds. So it's makes for hopefully a lot of fun, and yet we also weave in math concepts into the plot. So we'll be explaining a math concept in sort of a... clever, I hope, way mm-hmm. That you might not realize that you're learning a math concept until then you, at the end of the episode, kind of realize, oh, that's what that was. That was actually a concept. That was actually a math concept I was learning about. So one example is the Monty Hall problem.
Okay.
We go through the Monty Hall problem, which is a probability problem. But it's something that you would see done on, for example, like a game show. So we have it in the context of the plot, and then by the end, you start to realize, oh, that was something to do with probability.
You tricked me! I'm learning math right now!
I know, exactly! It's all a big trick, basically. But we hope that we can teach people some concepts, but also keep them laughing so that we keep them interested.
Do you remember growing up, did you ever watch the TV show on PBS called Square One TV?
You know, I never saw that. I'm sorry to say. that's a conversation stopper, right?
No, it's fine because I'll keep going. It is sort of a similar sort of concept in that it was teaching you math in a fun way. They used to do segments with two detectives, and it was called MathNet. And so instead of like Dragnet, it was the names are made up, but the problems are real. And they would incorporate math in this very same thing. And I remember they taught about the Fibonacci sequence.
Oh, cool. Excellent.
And for those who don't know, which is probably most people, when you hear a Fibonacci sequence, it's that the two previous numbers make up the next number. So it's 1 and 1, then 2, then 3, then 5, then 8, etc. And and I remember it was this mystery about where this treasure was hidden, and it was all about the Fibonacci sequence, and there was this little parrot that was, you know, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, Eureka! and I remember, right? And I remember thinking just as a kid, it was, you know, we didn't have cable, so we didn't have all the channels. It was just something, it was entertaining enough that I would watch it just as an entertainment thing. And I remember in my later adolescence going, wait a minute, they taught me the whole time. I know what this is because I watched math programs. What a nerd I am. But then I came away from it and being like, oh, you know, that is the way to do it. If it isn't a painful thing to be able to learn and gain these concepts in the practical reality and be laughing the whole time. That's great.
That's totally radical.
You can check them out on YouTube, both you and anyone else listening. You can just YouTube search MathNet and you'll find them and you'll go, okay. Wow, this was Richie's youth, huh? Okay.
Awesome. I'm glad I got a little insight into your youth. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, well, you share and I share. I don't want to have it be all you. And
I like it.
By no means does anyone want to have it be all me. So do you write this? or is it a collaboration with a bunch of folks, or what's your involvement with it?
So I created it, and I have written most of the scripts, but I would say now I also have a couple of collaborators that I have read drafts, and then they'll give me sort of feedback. So they kind of consult on the script, I would say, but ultimately I write it. So, I have a couple of math consultants, one of which is my husband, because I don't know if you know, but he is working on a PhD in applied mathematics. So.
Well, way to go,
so
Kellen.
There you go. Kellen's even more rad than you knew. But so he's one of the consultants, and then I also have another Susan Picker, who has a PhD in math education, and she's involved with Math for America, and she has consulted on kind of the math aspects of the script. And then I also have another gal named Vonanese McCoy, who's consulted more on the comedy side of the script. So there's a few different people I have read it and give me some feedback, and then I'll go back and I'll make revisions.
What else do you want to do? Because you and your husband both seem to me like that couple that I would love to be. You know what I'm saying? Where it's like, well, I'm a doctor, and then, well, when I was on tour, and, you know, all these kind of things. What else are we going to hear about from Christina Harris Peterson?
I mean, you know, maybe it sounds cooler than it is. I don't know, but... you know, that's nice of you to say that. I want to be what I like to do is I like to educate people, and I like to educate people in an entertaining way. I think that's probably how I would sum up my life. I love entertaining people, but I would say I've been in shows that were, maybe, how do I say it? I don't mean this kind of in a snooty way, but just, you know, they didn't have as much of a purpose to them.
Yeah, not a lot of substance. It's one of those things where you're not changed coming away from it.
Right. And I think to me that, you know, it just feels like, do I want to, sorry to, I hope I can say this on your podcast, on your show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. But, I mean, like, do I want to be doing a hemorrhoid commercial, or do I want to be doing something that's going to be helping to, you know, helping to educate people? I'd rather do something that's more worthwhile. So,
sure.
You know, so I hope I don't get a whole bunch of hemorrhoid commercial offers after this, but because I'll turn them down. But I mean, I would like to do things that are hopefully going to be helpful to the greater good, contribute somehow to the greater good. So, like, my film that I did was about a hearing impaired girl who wants to learn to sing, and so it was a very, very different style than Math Warriors. Math Warriors is a comedy. It sort of pokes fun at even some of the stereotypes, you know, but in the context of hopefully educating in math and encouraging women to get into math, and also encouraging various different types of people. I would say, if you look at Math Warriors, I've tried to kind of have a diverse cast, so so that anyone who might watch it could see someone that they might be able to relate to, or that they could say, hey, that person can do it, then so can I. In the context of my other film, which was a very different type of film, it was really kind of more focused on the experience of a hearing impaired girl. And this is the missionary that my husband mentioned, the missionary who I met in the deaf branch in New York City. And she had just such a great story and told me some of her experiences growing up. And I thought, gosh, someone's got to tell this story. And I kept kind of saying that. And then I thought, you know what? I guess I've got to tell this story. So that's how I ended up writing that script. But like I said, my style is not necessarily defined by, you know, comedy or drama, because the Diminished Chords film was much more of a drama, and Math Warriors is obviously very much a comedy and kind of pokes fun at things. But I think really the connecting string is just that I like to do things that are worthwhile and that tell stories of that help people understand and tolerate, maybe, and understand concepts even. So in the context of Diminished Chords, it was more about the tolerance piece, and then in the context of Math Warriors, it's much more about kind of actually trying to maybe explain certain concepts, but in a clever way. So that's that. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I love it. And I think it's, I think for people that are listening, it just seems like, I mean, I love that you've taken two different worlds and two different passions and been able to figure out how that they can go together so that it didn't have to be one or the other. And I feel like so much people will do that. Well, I can't possibly do this, so I have to pick between those two. I think it's vital for people to be able to be happy, but also be doing what they love, and also be doing what they feel like, you know, they're called to do, or what their purpose is.
Yeah, amen, amen. And I would say also, can I just mention that there were a lot of people that tried to tell me that I did have to choose. So at some point, I hope that people feel like they can follow their own passions and try not to allow other people to dictate what they can and can't do, because there were a lot of people that told me that I couldn't do it. So that I couldn't do both. And in many respects, there are seasons to my life, and there have been times when I've done a lot more of one and a lot more of the other. But ultimately, I mean, I'm trying my best to pursue both. But there definitely are people throughout time within my life that have tried to discourage me from one or the other. So just to anyone who might be listening, who might be considering what they want to do, I just hope that they'll go with their heart and try not to take what other people say so much to heart that you don't pursue what you want to do.
So I ask everyone that comes into the Cultural Hall a few questions, and I know you had mentioned that you have listened before, so you know what's coming. First of all, what is your calling in your ward right now?
So right now I actually don't have a calling, but I did teach Relief Society last week, and I most recently served in the Deaf Branch.
Okay. And I actually have been to the Deaf Branch there in New York.
Really?
Yeah, it was an interesting experience and kind of humorous, actually. Whenever I go on vacation, I like to go to church if I can. If there's a church nearby, I like to go. And I looked up online from where I was staying to where the nearest church and time worship service was. And I can't remember what the abbreviation is that's next to the ward, but I looked, you know, I went to Mormon.org and I did the whole worship with us thing, and I put in the address of where I was, and the branch was actually really close by, and it was at the perfect time, and I was, there was, to the next of the branch, it said, I didn't say, I can't remember what the abbreviation was.
It may have said ASL, did it?
It could have been.
Okay.
Maybe ASL. It was, ASL or something like that. Anyway, I remember looking at it and going, well, I don't know what that is, but that's the time. That's close. I'll go. And so I show up
Surprise!
At church and I'm like, well,
Surprise!
Yeah, points for being here, I guess. But it was, it was actually really sweet. And, most of the people actually that spoke that particular day spoke and signed. So it wasn't just me sitting there going, I think they're talking about, you know.
Yeah, usually they would have someone voice, like if they know that there's a hearing person that doesn't sign, they would have someone speak, like translate basically. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so maybe that's what it was. I can't remember. But I just remember going, there's something different here.
There's definitely something different. Yes, definitely. And I would say the other thing about the Deaf Branch, I mean, it's beautiful because the concepts are much simpler in sign language. There aren't as many words as there are in English. I would also say that just as a hearing person, the experience in the Deaf Branch is very different because you would think that, you know, in the Deaf Branch it would be one of the quietest wards in the church, but in reality it's probably one of the loudest wards in the church because people don't realize the noises that they're making, and so it's different, definitely.
If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make up one, what would you pick?
I've thought about this because I've listened to your show before, but I think that I would want to try and do some community outreach because I feel like that's something that maybe we're lacking a little bit. And I was surprised in previous callings that I've had where I've been in charge of service that we don't do more outside of our church. I would love to try and maybe facilitate some of that. We've been able to do a little bit of that in New York. We volunteer at homeless shelters and things like that. But I would love to do some community service outreach basically to kind of, you know, interact with the community and show the community who the Mormons are, I guess, is kind of what I'm thinking.
And then what is your favorite part of your faith?
I mean, I think the inclusiveness is what stood out to me when I was looking at different churches. And so I like my Mormon faith, I feel, is very inclusive. And I love that we don't sort of have these things where if you do this, you're going to hell. If you do this, you're going to hell. It's like, you know, there's chance for forgiveness. There's chance for repentance. And even if you've done something that was maybe not in line with the church, you still have the opportunity to come back, and we still want to kind of accept you. So I guess it's the idea of inclusion in the overall doctrine and just loving each other kind of regardless of our mistakes.
I'm looking forward in collaborating on this Boron project. I know that right now you're busy, and I understand that. But as things settle down, I'm looking.
Boron.
Yeah. And it's boron.
Woo!
And then
nice.
Right. See. Done. Right at the end. That's
cool.
That's the pivotal thing. And then everyone's changed, and they walk away from it going, yeah, I feel different.
Perfect.
I feel different.
Awesome.
I have a newfound respect for boron.
This could turn into a Math Warriors episode. Who knows? We have some musical episodes, actually, too.
You let me know, and I'm on the next plane.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Done.
Fabulous.
Done.
Awesome.
I love that that's how I get into things. I just beg my way into things. Here, have me do this. Oh, all right. I guess you can do it if you fly your way out here. Sure.
Oh, no. I think it'd be awesome. It'd be fabulous. Maybe also the next time I'm in Utah, because Kellen's from Utah, so we go there.
Yeah,
so.
You're welcome anytime here to the Cultural Hall in a live. We could do, wow, the possibilities are endless. Let's not wax on it. I hope that this has nourished and strengthened your body. If you're not healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to drive home in safety. And you'll be able to take these things into your daily life. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back.